Come to order. As we begin today, I'd like to just make an announcement and almost a disclaimer. We're going to be on a fast track for our three bills that we'll be hearing today and hope to be adjourning by 2:30. So, just FYI. But I do not want to short circuit or circumvent anyone who is here to give testimony because that is a significant value to this whole process. So with that, I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2806. Representative Gollum will preside as I move down and make a presentation. And then I would like to call forward to speak, be seated at the table with me, Doug Mercer and Molly Mercer.
Sometimes I forget. Representative Flores, let me welcome you to the House Committee on Education and admonish you that if you use an acronym, you will pay a dollar fine.
I don't see a jar up there.
We'll create one.
Oh. You might tell the audience why we...
A lot of those in the room do not know the education speak, and if we convert acronyms to words, it keeps everybody on the same level playing field. I'll also fine you if... What are they?
Cell phones.
Oh, if your cell phone goes off, I will fine you. My vice chair partner may be calling some of you, so be sure they're off. With that, Representative Flores, in the deference to time, would you tell us about House Bill 2806?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Flores, and I am state representative for House District 51, which includes Clackamas, Damascus, the newest city in the state of Oregon in the past 22 years, Boring, Estacada, and a small portion of southeast Portland, Multnomah County. House Bill 2806 is a Pledge of Allegiance bill, and it was brought here at the request by a good friend, long-standing friend of mine. His name is Doug Mercer, and he is with us today, as well as his daughter, Molly. The concern that was expressed and with which I concur is that there is perhaps a fading appreciation and recognition of the historical significance of the flag and its importance to us, not only as a people, as a society, and a culture. I will not delay my comments, but I would just like to say and to quote from a thought by Everett Dirksen, who was a United States congressman and senator in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And he said, and asked, perhaps we have lost our sense of continuity. Perhaps we have forgotten that we move in that same endless stream which began with our forefathers and which will flow on and on to embrace our children and our children's children. If we have, there will have gone with it sense that individual responsibility, which is the best hope that a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to equality can long endure. That is the sense that the respect and honor for the flag brings, and that is kind of the thrust of this bill, which is to allow schools to have one portion of their day, each day, to begin with the Pledge of Allegiance of the flag to the United States of America. And with that, I will turn to Mr. Mercer and Ms. Mercer, and they may continue.
Thank you, Linda.
My fellow Americans, thanks for the chance to talk with you in support of this bill.
And before you go further, Mr. Mercer, would you please give us your name for the record?
Of course.
Thank you.
My name is Doug Mercer. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you for the chance to talk with you in support of this bill. There is a great need and opportunity for all Oregonians from both sides of the aisle to come together in support of this bill. My wife and I are the parents of three kids attending school in the Portland Public Schools. Our son Ian is finishing his sixth year at our neighborhood elementary school. Our two daughters also attended there for 6 years each. Our daughters, Molly and Megan, are in the 11th and 9th grades at our local high school. At the elementary school, nearly every year, with all three of our kids, we have had to remind the teachers and principal multiple times each year to give their classes the opportunity to say the Pledge of Allegiance at least once a week, as required by present Oregon law. We realize that these dedicated teachers are very busy, but unfortunately, the principal and teachers continue to forget regularly. At the local high school, the same has been true. When our two girls started attending there, the Pledge of Allegiance was never being said at all. In fact, most classrooms did not even have a U.S. flag. In the fall, I communicated with the principal about the neglect of the pledge, and he agreed to remind his teachers to give students the opportunity weekly. But despite the reminder from the principal, the Pledge of Allegiance has been neglected by most teachers for most of this school year as well. In fact, every Monday night when the school, on Mondays, the schools give the pledge, and every Monday night I poll all three of my kids whether they've said the pledge that day. And 50% of the time, they have not. And in the beginning of the year, none of them were saying it. And it's only been because of our reminding of the school administration. Seeing a very discouraging pattern, I also emailed the assistant superintendent of the Portland Public Schools in October of 2004, and she mailed me back that she would ask all the district principals to remind their teachers to give their students the opportunity weekly. But the neglect has continued, as I mentioned, most of this school year. I emailed the principal of our local middle school, and he said he was unaware of the requirement, but would look into it. Again, the pledge has continued to be neglected there also most of this year. It had not been said there in years, as was the case at our local high school. I surveyed the friends of our kids, who confirmed they had never said the pledge while attending at the middle school all 3 years. While we have always lived in Portland, I work as a juvenile probation counselor in Vancouver, Washington. I have regular contact with the schools, students, parents, and co-workers in Clark County, Washington. The current law in Washington requires the opportunity for the Pledge of Allegiance, as it is written in the proposed Oregon House Bill 2806. I have surveyed the schools, students, parents, and co-workers, and confirmed that the students in Clark County regularly say the Pledge of Allegiance daily. Many of the schools practice the pledge each morning with a video with the daily morning announcements on the school intercom. I believe the pledge is practiced daily without being forgotten in Washington State because it is required by law as a daily routine that has been honored with discipline. Conversely, I believe the pledge is routinely forgotten in Oregon because it is only required weekly and doesn't become a part of the regular classroom schedule to be remembered. Just today, which was yesterday, I asked an almost 18-year-old on my probation caseload who happens to now live in Oregon. He attended Park Rose High School in Portland last year, which is not inside the Portland School District, and Centennial High School in Gresham this year. He said he never once said the pledge at Park Rose High School all last year, and said it maybe once this year at Centennial High School at an assembly. My wife, Stacy, who is in the audience, is a high school teacher in the Portland Public Schools since 1982. Her experience when leading her class weekly in the Pledge of Allegiance has been that her students have enthusiastically embraced the practice. Stacy has also taught some of the history and meaning of the pledge to her classes. Why is the Pledge of Allegiance important? We believe it is important for our schools to teach patriotism, to build and maintain the strength of our great country. Education hopefully teaches our children why they can appreciate, respect, and be proud of our country. The Pledge of Allegiance takes that respect and love of country one step farther, calling our children to a commitment to support our country. No country can survive or thrive without that commitment from its citizens. Our country has been attacked on U.S. soil on September 11, 2001, like never before. We are at war with terrorists at home and around the world. And yet, our country is politically divided deeply in too many ways. There is a tremendous need for unity in our schools and on every level of our society. It is estimated that there are 10 to 15 million illegal aliens living in the United States today. It is also estimated that an additional 8,000 a day, 3 million a year, are flooding into our country, overwhelming our culture and human services of education, medicine, and law and justice. There are nearly 30 languages spoken in the homes of the students of our one local Portland high school that our girls attend. That is astounding. Such is common in many of our schools across Oregon and in the Portland School District. Our local middle school has planned to make the school completely bilingual in the next few years, as additional government-subsidized housing is doubled and completed nearby this year. Our local high school, divided this year because of it being a failing school through No Child Left Behind provisions, into three small schools this year, one of them being the Spanish-English International School. There are gang fights and there is cultural and racial strife erupting regularly in the Portland public schools and in schools across the state. Just this last week, there were two separate knife attacks in the Portland public schools and one other gang stabbing with a screwdriver in the stomach during school hours at 8:30 in the morning at our girls' high school just a month ago. That's like 20 minutes after I dropped my kids off at school. In January, our local high school was in lockdown most of the day due to a gang fight that involved an entire hallway with about 30 students in the Spanish English International School hallway. School athletic events and activities were postponed for a week. About 5 shootings have occurred in the neighborhood this school year surrounding our local high school, within just a couple blocks, all around our high school. It is becoming commonplace. Similar problems are common across the nation, as demonstrated just 48 hours ago in the Minnesota high school shootings that left 10 dead, nearly equal to the tragedy of the Columbine High School massacre of 1999. And yet, we seem numb to this. We seem, because it's becoming so commonplace. Columbine hit us like a tidal wave. Today, it's just a blip in the news. And also, similar shootings at Thurston High School here in Oregon just a few years ago that we all remember. Due to many of these problems, our family is strongly considering moving to Clark County, Washington. It is our Oregon heritage that has kept us in Portland to this point. Incidentally, we live in a house that my grandfather built with my dad 60 years ago, and that is the main reason why we stay. We don't want to give up our Oregon heritage. There is a strong trend of families in our neighborhood of moving to Clark County, Washington, due to the problems I have mentioned today. The daily opportunity to salute the flag of the United States in our public schools would be a great step forward for Oregon. It would promote and nurture patriotism, unity, respect, and commitment for our state and country. If Oregon high school students started each day with the Pledge of Allegiance, it is more likely that this respect for our country would carry over and help us set a daily tone of unity and respect for their classmates, teachers, and the community as well. We believe all of us as Oregonians can agree to unite and support this bill, for uniting and strengthening us further as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We urge you to support House Bill 2806, and we thank you for your deep consideration. If you have any questions, my daughter, Molly, who's 16 and junior at the high school, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mercer. Molly, did you wish to make any comments?
He covered it.
He covered it. Okay. Are there any questions for either of the Mercers? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Mercer and Molly, thank you so much for coming and expressing your views. I did ask the committee administrator here to do a little research for me on the history of the pledge, when it was first instituted, when it was changed, because I was a child when it was changed. I'm a little older than you are. It was changed sometime in the 50s. I also asked him to look into whether the states of Minnesota and Colorado, for example, have daily recitals or weekly or none at all. But I do thank you for coming and bringing this to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening.
Any additional questions? Representative Shields.
I too, thank you very much for coming taking time out of your day to come down and testify. But if I could just respectfully talk a little bit about some of your testimony. And while I don't necessarily agree with some of what you said, particularly regarding the cause and effects of some of these problems, I do respect your ability to come here and say it, and I'm very glad you did. I would just, there are a lot of Latinos in my district, and I think just for the record, they would probably prefer not to be called illegal aliens, but undocumented. And I know you probably meant no offense by that, but I just would like to get that on the record.
Any additional questions or comments? Representative Farr.
Well, I just have a question. Do you really believe that saying the Pledge of Allegiance daily in schools will alleviate conflict between students?
I believe it will help. I believe it's a good first start. There's a lot more to do. I mean, this is just a first step, but it's a valuable first step. I think when we all take a few moments to reflect on our day and what our values are in the morning, I think we're all affected positively by that. And I think it sets a tone of respect on all levels that I think will carry over.
Mr. Mercer, you referred to your daily caseload. Would you like to tell the committee what it is that you do as a profession?
I'd love to. I'm a juvenile probation counselor in Clark County, and I've worked there since 1990, so this is my 15th year of working with kids in trouble. And I believe that teaching kids values and respect growing up is what makes a kid a good kid and helps them stop and think. And so I work with kids that are in trouble that are pulling the triggers and beating up other kids all day long. And my experience working with kids all these years is that this type of teaching is a step in the right direction to helping them treat other people with respect. My wife, by the way, has taught in the school district since 1982. She's a special ed high school teacher. And for the last several years, she's worked at an alternative school for the Portland Public Schools. All the kids are on probation, and they're all in foster care. And most of them are being cared for through the Boys and Girls Aid Society of Oregon. And so my wife and I together share a lot of experience working with kids, and we both have a firm conviction that this is a step in the right direction.
Representative Farr.
Molly, I wanted to ask you a question. Do you recall, during your years as a student, how often you said the Pledge of Allegiance in your classroom or at assemblies?
We never said it at assemblies. And I remember even when I was like in third grade, my dad still being on this issue. He's been dealing with it like ever since we were like in, started going to school. And we only said it whenever he would talk to the teachers. And yeah. Even once he did, like, our teachers didn't even have flags. They had to get flags. They're like, oh, Mr. Mercer wants us to say the pledge. But they don't realize that's state law. You have to give kids the chance.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Do you think that the teachers that you had at the time disrespected the flag?
The teachers I have now definitely do. I have teachers openly say to me, America is its worst enemy. That George Bush is best friends with Bin Laden. It's amazing, like, the lack of, it's not lack of patriotism, but it's, like, total, like, going against our country. And I think kids, especially at my high school, I don't know how common it is, but in the Portland public schools, I know that the teachers tend to be more like that. And I think kids, like, they really do take whatever their teachers tell them more seriously than people think. And they might stop and think, like, well, we're saying the pledge, and then my teacher's telling me this. It might make them think instead of just saying, oh, the person who knows history is telling me this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you all.
I'd like to call David Gulliver.
Thank you, Chair Flores. For the record, my name is David Gulliver. I'm a member of the staff of Representative Donna Nelson, District 24. The representative wanted to be able to testify here in person, but she was unable, so she's asked me to read a statement on her behalf. Chair Flores, members of the House Committee on Education, I thank you for your consideration today of House Bill 2806. Oregon currently requires its schools to lead their students in the Pledge of Allegiance only once each week. House Bill 2806 simply asks our schools to return to the days when school children made a daily ritual of the recitation of the pledge. This is an important step to help teach our children what it means to be an American. There are a number of things we do each and every day, things we teach our children to do each and every day. We teach our children to make their beds every morning. We teach them to brush their teeth before bedtime every night. But we are failing to teach our children one very important lesson, that every day we should be thankful that we live in the United States of America, the republic whose symbol is our flag. What else does our flag symbolize? I can think of no better illustration than this excerpt from I Am the Flag by Ruth Apperson Russ. I am the flag of the United States of America. I was born on June 14, 1777 in Philadelphia. There, the Continental Congress adopted my stars and stripes as the national flag. My 13 stripes alternating red and white with a union of 13 white stars in the field of blue represented a new constellation, a new nation dedicated to the personal and religious liberty of mankind. Today, 50 stars signal for my union, one for each of the 50 sovereign states and the greatest constitutional republic the world has ever known. My colors symbolize the patriotic ideals and spiritual qualities of the citizens of my country. My red stripes proclaim the fearless courage and integrity of American men and boys and the self-sacrifice and devotion of American mothers and daughters. My white stripes stand for liberty and equality for all. My blue is the blue of heaven, loyalty, and faith. I represent these eternal principles, liberty, justice, and humanity. I embody American freedom, freedom of speech, religion, assembly, the press, and the sanctity of the home. I typify that indomitable spirit of determination brought to my land by Christopher Columbus and all my forefathers, the Pilgrims, Puritans, settlers at Jamestown and Plymouth. I am as old as my nation. I am a living symbol of my nation's law, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights. I voice Abraham Lincoln's philosophy, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. I stand guard over my nation's schools, the seedbed of good citizenship and true patriotism. I am displayed in every schoolroom throughout my nation. Every schoolyard has a flagpole for my display. Daily, thousands upon thousands of boys and girls pledge their allegiance to me and my country. Chair Flores, distinguished committee members, let us live up to the ideal embodied by Roos's writing. Let us ask our schools once again to lead our boys and girls in the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance each day. I urge you to support House Bill 2806 and pass it on to the full House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gulliver. Are there any questions?
Chair.
Representative Farr.
Mr. Gulliver, I appreciated your recitation of I Am the Flag, and I just wanted to state for the record that when I was in school, and I don't want to give away my age, but we did say the Pledge of Allegiance daily, and I was very proud to do it, and nothing makes me more proud each day than to start out our floor session by saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, also I want to state for the record that when you read this poem, it made me think again upon why we are all Americans, and that we truly are a blend of all cultures. We all came here from, most of us anyway, are not Native Americans and did come here from other countries. And I am very proud to share my Americanism with my fellow Americans from other countries. And so I just wanted to state that for the record. Thank you again for reciting this poem.
Thank you, Representative.
Please thank Representative Nelson for providing the testimony, and thank you very much for delivering it.
Thank you, Chair Flores.
Andrea Meyer.
Chair Flores, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. The ACLU opposes House Bill 2806. Indeed, we believe that ORS 339.875 that sets forth the requirement that public schools provide students the opportunity to recite the version of the Pledge of Allegiance that includes, quote, one nation under God, unquote, violates Oregon Constitution's religious freedom provision, Article 1, Section 5. That provision states in part, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury for the benefit of any religious or theological institution. Indeed, we believe this law is ripe for challenge. Let's not forget that the pledge originally did not include God. It states, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. In 1954, in the midst of the McCarthy era's Red Scare period, Congress added under God. The hallmark of the McCarthy era was its pressure to conform in politics and religion, in speech and belief. The prevailing assumption was that all good, non-communist Americans believed in a monotheistic God. Untrue in the 1950s, this assumption is more strikingly untrue today. Many Americans subscribe to no religion, and even people who do worship a monotheistic God show great variation in their definition of a deity. Many do not subscribe to the idea that God's role is to organize the affairs of humans and countries, as embodied in the phrase, one nation under God. If the goal of this law is patriotism, then we should choose a non-religious expression of patriotism, such as the pre-1954 pledge. Choosing to include the word under God indicates that the real purpose of the pledge here is religious, not patriotic. The law allows a child to, quote, maintain a respectful silence during the salute. We have received a number of complaints by parents and students since this law was passed, requiring them to stand and otherwise force them to participate in the pledge against their beliefs, be they religious or for any other reason. The right to express oneself by not participating in the pledge includes the right to remain seated while others stand. The famous case of Tinker v. Des Moines School District in 1969 upheld the rights of students to silently protest by wearing black armbands. Remaining seated during the pledge is a form of silent expression, just like black armbands are in Tinker. The practical result of this law will be to ostracize students who cannot or choose not to participate in the pledge for whatever reasons they or their parents decide. It is callous for the government to force school children of minority faiths to isolate themselves from their classmates to avoid participating in a religious exercise in violation of their conscience. And under this proposal, children will be forced daily to set themselves apart from their peers. This is just the type of difference that other children quickly pick up on and use to bully and harass the lone child who is now marked as different and bad from the majority of other students in that school. Indeed, the Oregon Supreme Court has recognized the need for our schools to protect our children. Quote, parents and lawmakers may and do assume that the hours, days, and years spent in school are the time and the place when a young person is most impressionable by the expressed and implicit orthodoxy of the adult community and most sensitive to being perceived as different from the majority of his or her peers. Famous constitutional cases have involved this socializing rather than this intellectual functions of schools. We can only imagine any attempt to go from one week to every day and at all opening school assemblies will cause parents and children to stand up and challenge this law. The most powerful testimony on how dangerous it is when governments begin to require adherence to compulsory measures reflecting national unity was made in the 1943 U.S. Supreme Court case of West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett. There, Jehovah's Witnesses challenged the requirement that they participate in the Pledge of Allegiance. In siding with the Jehovah's Witnesses, the court noted the following lesson of history. Quote, struggles to coerce uniformity of sentiment in support of some end thought essential to their time and country have been waged by many good as well as by evil men. Nationalism is a relatively recent phenomenon, but at other times and places the ends have been racial and territorial security, support of a dynasty or regime, and particularly plans for saving souls. As first and moderate methods to attain unity have failed, those bent on its accomplishment must resort to an ever-increasing severity. As governmental pressure toward unity becomes greater, so strife becomes more bitter as to whose unity it shall be. Probably no deeper division of our people could proceed from any provocation than from finding it necessary to choose what doctrine and whose program public educational officials shall compel youth to unite in reciting, embracing. Ultimately, futility of such attempts to compel coherence is a lesson of every such effort from the Roman drive to stamp out Christianity as a distributor of its as a disturber of its pagan unity, the Inquisition as a means to religious and dynastic unity, the Siberian exiles as a means to Russian unity, down to the fast-falling efforts of our present totalitarian enemies. Those who begin coercive elimination of dissent soon find themselves exterminating dissenters. Compulsory unification of opinion achieves only the unanimity of the graveyard. The ACLU of Oregon urges this committee not to proceed with House Bill 2806. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Meyer? Representative Farr.
I might add, Ms. Meyer, with my story of saying the Pledge of Allegiance as a kindergartner, that my best friend at the time was a Jehovah's Witness and did not say the Pledge of Allegiance. I just wondered, going back to one of your statements, could children say the Pledge of Allegiance and omit the words under God if they chose to? They could still say the Pledge of Allegiance and just omit under God.
Chair Flores, Representative Farr. Children can do whatever they want in the school setting if they choose to omit. That's not our concern, that they're being compelled to say the speech per se because we have this opt-out, but we still believe that it is government endorsement and sponsorship of, and as it sets forth in the statute, requires them to say under God. And as such, that infringes on Article 1, Section 5. There is a lot of children who may get up and say it, and omit those words. There may be children who get up and say it and don't believe in any of it. And there also may be children who choose not to stand up and to not participate. And it may be for religious reasons or it may be for free speech reasons that they do not want to be compelled to speech that they don't believe in, regardless of God. And while those, you know, so there's all different reactions, but those children are, as my testimony talks about, set aside and ostracized, and we are deeply concerned that that difference, particularly at a very young age, and a difference in religion, we know from our past representation of clients that that difference becomes quite pointed out and the children are ostracized, bullied, harassed, and intimidated in their schools. Thank you, Ms. Meyer.
Thank you. I'm going to leave. I'm interested in this hearing, but I have to testify on another bill as well, so I will take my absence. Thank you.
Since Youth Representative March has requested additional information be provided. First, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2806, and we will not... Oh, I'm sorry. We won't. We will reopen the public hearing and welcome you forward.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, and I represent the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Military Officers Association of America, and the Military Order of World Wars. I urge you to go forward with this. There is a challenge to this law under God in the federal courts. Let the federal courts decide. And if they decide against us, of course, the bill will be null and void. But if they say it is all right, then this bill has passed and we can continue. For further information, I'm a former math teacher at North Salem High School. I worked at Marion County Court School as a high school teacher and coordinator. And I was the principal of Woodburn Alternative High School, which included North Marion District and Jervis District. If you know that part of the state, 60% of my students were Hispanic, 20% Russian, and 20% everything else. Never at any time did I have anyone ever refuse to say the pledge. I only got thank yous from the parents. And I urge you to go forward with this bill. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate your service. For the record, close the public hearing on House Bill 2806. It was only by oversight. Oh, I'm sorry. We will reopen it. Please come forward. And I will just say for the record as you're moving forward that it was not simply because of the request of Representative March that we will not be moving to work session. We had not posted it for a work session. So that was my oversight and probably resulting in some of my own personal flummox.
Hello, I'm Stacy Mercer. My husband always tries to get me to get up here and speak, and of course I say no. But I felt compelled after our young lady from the ACLU spoke, and I wish she was here because I've been a high school and junior high teacher since 1982. In the last 14 years, they're kids that are all on probation and parole, and I adore these kids. I wouldn't work there if I didn't adore them. There is never that I can ever recall a single time that I have ever allowed a child to be ostracized, set aside, or anything else because they choose not to take the opportunity if they want to say the pledge. I believe that, unfortunately, when we look at the pledge, there seems to be a division in the sense that we think it's a us, we, or we, them thing. It's not. It's our country. And just like Representative Farr said, you know, my family were Irish potato farmers and you know, copper miners, and we're all here from someplace else. But I am thrilled to be an American, and to ever state that there is something wrong with the desire to say the pledge, given the opportunity for kids to say it daily if they so choose. I would hate to see that seen as a bad thing. My students are never coerced. They are given the opportunity, and you would be amazed how many of them are really thrilled to research the pledge, and whether they agree or disagree with points, we talk about it. They get to say their opinions. That's what America is about. It's not a country with a dictator or a country where it's us, them. It's all of us. It's the melting pot. And my own children, there have been times that I've not allowed them to participate in particular school activities, and I write a note to the teacher saying, please take them out of the little sex ed unit in fifth grade because I'd like to teach them that myself because as their mom, I love to teach my girls those things. I don't want a teacher doing it. Even though I am a teacher, my kids have never been ostracized because they're different. There have been years they've been the only student pulled out of that unit. But unlike what our ACLU young lady said, my kids are not belittled or ostracized. They just choose not to do it, and that's okay. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Stacy. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to go? Sir. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, my name is David Gulliver, and after hearing that presentation from the ACLU representative, I'd like to speak on my own, not on behalf of my employer, but just a personal message. It appears the main complaint of the ACLU with the Pledge of Allegiance is not the pledge itself, but the phrase, under God. And I'd like to ask the members of the committee to answer the question, what does the phrase under God mean? Does it mean specifically under Jesus? Does it mean specifically under Allah, under Vishnu, under Krishna, Thor, Odin, Zeus, Yahweh? The word God is deliberately chosen in the pledge because it's ambiguous and it can incorporate any religious faith. And some people might be concerned that an endorsement of any religion at all is discriminatory because there are some people who are atheists. And to that I would like to state that even a person who is an atheist who denies the existence of a divine supreme being could recognize that there are certain powers greater than an individual, such as the power of a government, the power of a constitution, the power of a liberty. And even for people who choose not to believe in a divine God, couldn't the term God, as used in this context, be used to signify something greater than that individual? So really, it appears to me that the complaint about the phrase under God being divisive and imposing religion really isn't a valid complaint at all.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin. Representative March?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gulliver, in reading the existing law, the word God is capitalized, not in lowercase, which would sort of negate the argument of the broader, but more a specific God. So would you have any comment on that aspect?
Yes, Representative. I'm no English major. I am not an expert on grammar. I think that the choice to capitalize is simply a choice of an individual to either assign to that word the value of the Christian God or simply to represent whatever power the person chooses to represent.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyone else? Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2806. Thank you very much, and we will be revisiting this discussion. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 3174. Mr. Keller.
Yes, ma'am. House Bill 3174 establishes process and criteria for renewal of charter of public charter school.
Thank you. I think we have Karen Hikas here. Would you like to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Hikas, and I am the... It's okay. My name is Karen Hikas, and I'm the director of the Oregon Charter Schools Development Center. And as you know, public charter schools are... they exist and operate through a contract or a charter with a local school district. And up front, those charters, the law allows that charter contract to be granted for up to a period of 5 years. The way that Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 338 currently reads is that the charter may be granted for up to a term of 5 years and then renewed upon the authorization of the sponsor, period. It does not address charter school renewal. It does not provide adequately at all for what's the next step beyond that initial term. Many charter schools throughout Oregon and many sponsoring districts throughout Oregon have expressed their desire to see Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 338 amended and to adequately and thoroughly address charter school renewal. Up front, many charters are not thinking about renewal. They're thinking about their initial existence and their initial operation, and many charter contracts do not even include language about renewal. I encourage you to support House Bill 3174. What it will do is provide for four key provisions that based on the Charter School Development Center's 13 years of experience in working with all the players in the charter school arena, these are the best practices, and 3174 would provide for a criteria, a process, a timeline, and a term length for charter schools. Specifically, we believe that the renewal process should be based on the performance of the charter school. It's kind of the bottom line philosophical premise of charter schools is accountability in exchange for autonomy. And if charter schools are performing according to the terms of their charter, they should be allowed to continue to exist and not have their future existence dependent on anything else, really. Changing turnover in staff, turnover in board members, current budget situations, etc. We also believe that the renewal timeline should be adequate so that the district and the charter both have ample time to deal with the large issue of whether to renew a charter, to determine whether the charter is performing. So 3174 would require that discussion to start 120 days before the charter expires, which is about 4 months, so that there would be adequate time if the district wants to see revisions and so forth. We also believe that charter applicants should have the right to appeal a denial decision should the district decide that they don't want to see that charter renewed. Essentially, House Bill 3174 mirrors the appeals process up front in ORS Chapter 338, so it does provide for a hearing and appeals process all the way up to the state and the court, should that be required. We also believe that families should have the confidence that their children will be able to complete an entire level of their education in one school without kind of the constant concern of maybe having to transfer their kids because their school's shutting down. So we do believe the charter term should be a minimum of 5, maximum of 15 years. We also, the rationale for that is that our charter schools don't have any money for facilities. It's very hard to lease or buy a facility if a charter only has a contract for a year or 2 years. So this is a no fiscal impact bill. We don't have any money clearly to allocate for charter school facilities, but this bill will position them better to lease and buy facilities if they are able to have a longer charter term. We also see the need for districts to have the option of just extending the charter for a year as opposed to going through a full comprehensive renewal process. I just spoke with a sponsor this morning who really wishes to do that for one of their charters because the charter's so new, they don't have enough data to base a renewal decision on. So we'd like to be able to see that provision. I have made every effort to collaborate with all the key partners involved in charter schools, Oregon School Boards Association, Oregon Department of Education, Oregon Education Association. I have talked in depth with many representatives from those organizations and understand that some of them have some amendments they would like to see to the bill as it currently stands. What I'd like to recommend is that we form, that you direct us to form a work group, Charter Schools Development Center, OSBA, ODE, OEA. I know I'm using acronyms, but I think I said them first, full out. So please don't find me. I would like to. Okay. Well, I'll defer to you on that. I do have some ones in my wallet. I would like to ask you to direct us, and Representative Dahlem has graciously agreed to chair that work group. We believe if we all sit down together, we can put together a bill that we can all support. And also to let you know, the Senate Education Committee will be hearing their version of this bill that's identical right now, this coming Monday, the 28th at 3 p.m.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Hikas? Representative March?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hikas, one thing that I don't see in here, which I think I'd like to see, is something about either a conditional or probationary renewal. In other words, you might have a charter school who seems to be almost getting it together at the end of their five-year charter, mm-hmm. but maybe if we just give them a probationary period of a couple of years, they'll finally get it together. Mm-hmm. Probably not a problem for most schools, but it's something that I'd like to see kind of instead of it's 5 to 15, something as an intermediate step if necessary.
What about the one-year extension? Would that address that problem?
Something
if they were able
along
to do maybe
lines.
One or two of those?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just
something
that's a great
idea
to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We will be talking further about the work group after we take the testimony, so we'll talk about that. Any further questions for Ms. Heitzke?
Okay. Thank you very much.
So hang in there with us. Don, is it Wildfang, and Stephanie Hinkle.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Wildfang. For the record, I am the executive director at Morrison Campus Alternative Charter School in Dallas, and a founder on that board as well. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill before you. Karen did a nice job, and I know we're pinched for time, so I'll try to ratchet this down a little. I've been an educator for 25 years and currently hold my standard superintendent license. Worked in the district where our charter school was an alternative high school. Through the recommendations from the State Department, we did a conversion program and moved that to a charter school 2 years ago. I also serve on the charter district statewide charter school task force that Joni we meet on a quarterly basis, and this issue in particular was one that each members that sit on that committee saw as a need, and it was something that we could agree on, and I still think there's enough agreement within the structure of this to not have a deal breaker. I'm also the chair of the steering committee for the Charter School Development Center for the state of Oregon, and we have two representatives from traditional districts. Portland Public School has a member, Susan Cosmala, that sits on our committee, and Phyllis Giles, Salem Kaiser, also sits on that committee. So they've had an opportunity to review this, and each of those folks have also expressed a desire to have something in place for renewal. And I know in particular neither of them, they'll speak to that later. We've heard a little bit of acrimony today, so I just want to compliment you in particular and the state of Oregon. I've been able to attend three nationwide conferences on charter schools, and I personally feel like Oregon has done an excellent job in trying to navigate this really highly emotionally charged area. The Department of Ed does an excellent job, as far as I'm concerned, working with us that educate our students and in the public arena. And my compliments to you for hearing this and being willing to participate in it, because you do get yourself ahead of the curve on this and provide us some good leadership and some good direction that, that those of us that are out there trying to make these programs work. Four reasons in favor of the bill before you. For me, it clarifies the process, and it does provide some guidelines that we currently do not have. And so, number two, that alone is going to help us reduce conflict between the parties. As I said earlier, these are emotionally charged issues as we're looking for reduced funding for state education. It begins to feel like competition for students, unhealthy competition in areas where we're both sides of the table trying to do the best we can with the funds available to us to educate our students. It also provides a process for closure. As we heard here, accountability is good. Charter schools are highly accountable to the sponsor districts, and we've got charter contracts and our applications in place that state pretty clearly those things that we'll try to accomplish as charter schools and what we'll be held accountable for. So the districts, the sponsor districts, in my opinion, do have a good opportunity to hold us accountable, especially with the contract they develop with us. The fourth thing is it does deal with renewal, which, as you saw, currently there is no language there, and that is just a real disaster. We're far enough into these things now in the state that the renewals are going to start happening in a hurry. And so just in closing, again, I'd like to express my appreciation for hearing the bill and hope that that we'll have support. And as Karen mentioned, I don't think the differences out there are so great that the work group couldn't resolve those differences. I'm confident in the process, and I love working with our students on a daily basis. It's provided me 27 years of great delight and pleasure, and I look forward to doing it a while longer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wildfang.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Stephanie Hinkle. I'm the director and co-founder of Trillium Charter School. We're located in North Portland, very close to Emanuel Hospital, if you're any at all familiar with Portland. We are one of the largest charter schools in the state, the largest in Portland. We are not, unlike Don's school, we're not a conversion school. We were started by a group of parents. This is our third year of operation. We have about 200 students. We are a K-12 school, so we have a big span of ages. We are, you know, a full-service kind of school in that sense. We, about 40% of our students are in free and reduced lunch, so we qualify as a Title I school. We have a very diverse population. So charter schools serve a wide range of needs and students throughout the state. And we're hoping that they're here to stay. They give a lot of choice to families. They used to be a partisan issue. I'm really hoping that they become a nonpartisan issue because they really serve everyone. I want to talk a little bit about the emotional context of this bill because our school was started by a group of parents. It took us 3 years before we operated. It was the hardest thing we'd ever done. It was very rewarding. The struggles were sometimes felt insurmountable. And what it did was reengage people who weren't normally as involved in education back into that environment, which I think is critical for our community and our country. And it's also a group of people who aren't necessarily as savvy about education, and everybody has learned a whole bunch more. There are some practical aspects of this bill that are really important to us. One of them is the continuity that it provides, which is essential, especially in our school where we are K-12 and we have families that plan on being there the whole time. And if they're consistently concerned about renewal, that makes their choice harder. It also is harder to retain staff who think that you have the opportunity to be closed down and they would have to go find a job in a fairly hostile environment for teachers right now. So those are pretty big issues. The funding is also an issue. Finding sites for charter schools is one of our largest obstacles. We've outgrown our school. We need a new building. It's very hard to finance a major project like that without some kind of assurances that we'll be around. So that's something to really consider. Charter schools are fairly vulnerable to politics. And in Portland, I feel like we've been lucky enough that they have tried to not bring politics in it and tried to have a fairly open mind. I have heard from other charter school developers that's not necessarily the case in their districts, that it has felt at times for them that every obstacle that could be thrown their way has been. And this would remove one of those certainly emotional obstacles for them. The concern that many of these charter schools have is that, okay, well, they finally have to grant us a charter, but then they can close us down for no reason because there's no legislation that provides for renewal. And whether it's a realistic concern or not, it's a concern that doesn't need to be there. We just need a process so that they can worry about things that are really important and really have to do with long-term viability of their programs, funding being one, you know, making their programs great. But they shouldn't have to worry about this. This is just a process issue that we can all solve together. So I would just like you, I urge you to put aside the committee to work on this and take care of this business that somehow was kind of an oversight, I think, originally, and have it happen so we can not worry about this one aspect anymore. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hinkle. Are there any questions for either of these panelists? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'll call forward Jim Green. And Lori Wimmer Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. Hopefully up at the dais today, I provided to your staff a copy of a contract that I promised you a while ago. When you had your informational hearing on charter schools, I was going to give you a sample contract that I have drafted on behalf of one of our clients, the Sherwood School District, with the charter school. And I wanted specifically to refer to you on page 21. Ms. Hikas is right. In the law, there is nothing about renewal. And for the districts that I work with, where we have a charter school and we go in and negotiate a contract for them, it is one of the first things that I talk to them about is you're going to want to put something in your contract about renewal or extension of the contract. And so you'll see contracts that I've written, we put that in there. And I agree with what Ms. Hikas and the other folks have said. We need something in the law around renewal. You'll note that I signed up in opposition to this bill. There are a couple of problems with the bill. One, an automatic five-year renewal does cause some concern for our members on that. And it changes the dynamic as well when an application would come before a board, because all of a sudden you're saying the initial contract can be 1 to 5 years. But automatically you're going to get a five-year renewal if you meet everything that goes on in your charter school. You're saying then that it's from 6 years to 10 years, really. And school districts are reluctant to enter into contracts for that length of time. There are things that have come up, you know, recently No Child Left Behind has been enacted. We've had to address that in our contracts that weren't addressed the first time around. And also, Ms. Hikas pointed out an issue with regard to the bill about appeal of a decision not to renew. Currently in the law, if a sponsor or a potential sponsor doesn't sponsor that charter school, the appeal is to the state board, for the state board first to conduct mediation and then try to get the parties to come to yes so the school district runs that charter school as opposed to the state board. But the state board ultimately could sponsor. Here, it's not really delineated out what that appeal is. Does the state board then renew the contract and then be the sponsor of that charter school? Do they order the school district to renew that? A step which I think I would pretty strongly oppose. We don't want the state board ordering our districts to enter into a contract that they don't want to enter into. I think what Ms. Hikas did mention, however, was a work group. There are some issues that can be worked out. I would volunteer to serve on that work group, and I think it's an issue we need to deal with. I think when I testified before this committee on the issue of charter schools in general, one of the three things I mentioned that needed to be worked on, facilities and funding, was also renewal. And I think it's an issue that needs to be dealt with. Criteria needs to be put in the law. Districts need that protection. Charter schools need that protection. Parents need that protection of folks who are enrolled in charter school. So I would encourage you to appoint a work group. And if you have questions about the contract that I've handed you or the extension that we worked out and that we negotiated into the law or into this contract, I'd be happy to take those questions. But it is one of the first things I talk to our folks about is you're going to do a charter school. You've already approved the application. You're going to do it for 1 to 5 years. Now think about what you want to do in a renewal of that or an extension of it. So it is something that we're thinking about in contracts. It's not required to be in there, but we strongly encourage our districts to put it in there. One, for their forethought on what an educational program is going to look like in the district. Two, to give those applicants that stability that they so desperately need as they try to run that charter school for a longer period of time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll hear from Ms. Whalen first.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen of the Oregon Education Association, representing our 43,000 members here for OEA. We, too, have some concerns with the bill as written, but I feel confident that were we able to work in the work group on this, that we can come to some resolution and fix those concerns, some of which you've heard from Jim Green. One of the concerns we had is a little along the lines of Representative March. We felt that the automatic renewals of one-year periods ought to have an end limit. They ought not be renewable ad infinitum, for example. And so there are a couple of things that we'd like to see tweaked a bit, if you will, but we are confident that this could be a bill that we could ultimately support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for either of our testifiers? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Randy Harnish.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Randy Harnish with the Department of Education, and I wanted just to take a minute to let you know that we believe in the department that this bill addresses some legitimate problems that are facing charter schools, and I think Ms. Hikas mentioned that we may be looking at a large number of charter schools over the next couple of years that will begin to face the renewal process. So identifying and working with this issue now it's timely. The bill, I think, is a reasonable response addressing some of those issues. We at the department have identified some concerns. I think you heard from Mr. Green and Ms. Whalen. We share some of those concerns. We would very much like to participate in the work group and look forward to that opportunity.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Harmon? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Then what we have here is the opportunity for a work group. Representative Dahlem, I understand that you are willing to preside in this particular endeavor. Public notice that there will be a work group on House Bill 3174. I would then like to ask Karen Hikas, of course, and Oregon Department of Education, Joni Gillis and or Randy Harnish, Jim Green from OSBA, Lori Wimmer-Whalen or your designate from the Oregon Education Association. And then I would also like to include Rob Kramer, since he does have an interest in the charter issue as well. So at your call and arrangement, Representative Dahlem, we'll look forward to a report back to you and from your work group in what is a reasonable period of time.
I thought I would get with the administrator in time and establish a schedule, timeline, dates, and hour to meet, and a time, and that would give us the time to get back with
you. Well, we'll look for a report from your on your progress then. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3174. And clearly, Mr. Feller, do you think we have time to cover our remaining bill? Okay. Then we will open. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2954. Mr. Keller.
House Bill 2954 requires school districts to submit written plan of instruction for talented and gifted children to Superintendent of Public Instruction for approval. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2005.
Well, since this is a pretty streamlined and upfront type of bill, I will just let that introduction stand on its merits by virtue of what we're trying to accomplish, since I would be the chief sponsor on this. And then, Andy, would you like to come forward from ODE and give us any testimony you might have?
ODE?
Well, it has already been referenced in the record as Oregon Department of Education. He's just miffed that I tried to blame him for something earlier.
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. This is a pretty streamlined bill. It would provide the Oregon Department of Education with a very important tool. As it is right now, school districts only supply us with their talented and gifted education plans if they are applying for a talented and gifted education, or can I say TAG now? TAG grant. And we haven't had grants in a number of years because of the funding situation. And so it would be very nice for the department to have access to this information, simply because sometimes I am called as the TAG specialist to act with wanting to know about a certain district, and I sometimes have to honestly give them the answer of beats me, because I don't have access to those plans. So it would be nice to have them early on, so we could circumvent, you know, the whole process of complaints and things, where I could give advice to districts that need it to improve their plans, and obviously to give better education to talented and gifted students.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a bill that was brought. I was approached on, and I like the concept here. The question I have for the department is, currently, districts may submit these plans to you for approval, and you probably aren't getting very many, since we're not giving out any money with them. But under the way this bill is now written, districts shall submit them to you for approval, which means you will now be required to approve 198 TAG programs, plans of instructions, is the department prepared to approve 188 plans, and would that require additional workload?
Chair Flores, Representative March, we are prepared to deal with this. As it is right now, all districts are by law required to have a plan. So just to submit it to us is a matter of delivering it to us by some means, and we see it being very easy to do through our continuous improvement planning process, where districts every 2 years submit that plan. Obviously, they may not have to resubmit a new plan every 2 years if this is the plan they have and it's fine. And approved. But the main thing is we do have a tool that we can use for getting these plans in. It would be some additional work, but it's one of those where it would have a big payoff in that we would not probably have this number of district complaints or other things to deal with in the meantime.
Thank you. That was my concern was that this was all of a sudden requiring additional work for the department that you are not currently doing. And seeing as I sit in another realm, I didn't want you coming in and asking for more money for this.
So in other words...
Is that a legal term?
That is a legal term for the day.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2954. I see no other business unless there are comments to bring before the committee. In that case, our House Education Committee is adjourned.
All efficiency.